We value your support in making our fund drive a success. You're listening to KPFT Houston.
Welcome to Think Wing Radio with Mike Honig on KPFT 90.1 FM. We thought we'd give you a little bit more music there. It's a good tune. I have a guest this week. His name is Alex Mohajer. He is a political writer and commentator for the Huffington Post, co-founder and editor-in-chief of Bros for America. That's B-R-O-S. He is a JD and earned it at Chapman University School of Law, where he studied constitutional law. His work is among the most shared commentary on the Huffington Post. He has been named one of Out Magazine's 100 most eligible bachelors, but I like him for his mind, and was a featured speaker at Politicon 2017. And I love this part. This is actually in his online profile. At law school, he was named by his graduating class as most likely to be held in contempt. I love that. That alone sort of speaks volumes about your nature and why you went mostly into journalism rather than law.
Yeah, that basically sums it up.
It's kind of like, God forbid I should ever have been drafted. I would be like most likely to be stockaded, most likely to get a dishonorable discharge. It's like, thank God.
You know, and I have gotten that basically abuse. I've gotten a lot of abuse for my work, which I find to be sort of just fitting, like it's sort of a through line for me. I'm always sort of ruffling feathers, but, you know.
One of the things that I like from your profile that I didn't read just because I needed something a little briefer is you studied at Chapman under Hugh Hewitt, and you studied at Berkeley under Robert Reich.
Correct.
Now that's diversity.
I've had a very unique experience.
Yeah, I think that people tend to, you know, what do they call it? Confirmation bias. You know, it's like if you're a liberal, you'll tend to want to intern under liberal mentors. How did it come to be that you got someone so far on the left and so far on the right? Hugh Hewitt is, he's a conservative. He's not a crazy right conservative, but he is a conservative.
And you know, Hugh Hewitt is a very good man. I did study underneath him and spent time with him, and he's a great educator, and I have nothing negative to say about him. I think I disagree with him on politics and to dramatic effect, but I think that
most likely to be held in contempt.
I think there's a major problem right now in American politics, which is that we exist in such a partisan time that we view each other as the enemy instead of adversaries in a disagreement. There is a time where I feel like you could look at an adversary like Mr. Hewitt and acknowledge that although we disagree on something, that at the end of the day we're still Americans, and we can go grab a beer at the end of the day, and you know, and it's okay because we are just having a conversation about how to best move this country forward.
You know,
it's become a conversation that's where we're enemies, where we are, and that's problematic. I think that's the source of a lot of our problems.
Alex, we're having a little in and out quality on your. I guess you're on your cell phone.
Yeah. How about?
Okay. Is that better? Say something.
Can you hear me now?
Yes. Superior. Okay.
Okay, great.
So let's go with that. We were having a conversation here in the control room before my show started, and you know, we were talking about how you've got the left wing, the far left, that wants everything perfect now, according to their definition, and the far right wing that wants everything perfect now, according to their definition. And, you know, there's an old expression that you shouldn't let the perfect be the enemy of the good enough. And,
right.
You know, when you have reasonable conservatives and reasonable liberals who have divergent points of view, but, you know, there's like the Venn diagram of things you must have in common in terms of the ends you want to achieve, if not the reasons you want to achieve them. You know, you don't have to agree with why I want to do something as long as you agree with the thing I want to do.
Yes. And, you know, I personally have been a lifelong progressive. I mean, I was protesting the Iraq War back in 2003 in Berkeley, California. You know, I was basically as progressive as it come, but, you know, I voted for Hillary Clinton. I campaigned to get her elected. And because of that, there's a faction of the American left that now views me as a centrist corporatist. I mean, this is what I get from people online. And I'm like, look, I was back protesting and, you know, in the trenches back before you even knew, you know, that Bernie Sanders existed. You know, so I it's a very weird time because people are coming in with a lot of political naivete and they just want what they want and they want it now. And they don't understand that that's not how democracy works.
You know,
democracy is formed through compromise and through battle.
A functional republic, a functional right. Democratic republic, which is what we're supposed to be, what we more or less were until recently. One of the things that I have sort of been looking at is, and unfortunately, I'm losing my train of thought here. Okay, you were talking about conservatives.
Yeah.
All right, we'll have to come back to it.
Well, you know, I will say on this point, though, that I did write a piece for the Huffington Post, and if anyone wants to check it out, it's called A Tale of Two Marches. And it's basically comparing two quite sort of scary effects, but the parallels between Donald Trump's rise and also to the rise of the Ayatollah Khomeini in 1979.
Okay,
in
now there's been I've made a lot of comparison to Trump and Mussolini. There's been a little comparison to Trump and Hitler, not going to the ovens, but just in terms of the mechanics.
Yeah.
So where is the Ayatollah? Now you're Iranian American.
I am. But you know, I'm younger than. You know, I'm a millennial at the end of the day, and so I come far after the Islamic Revolution happened. So I didn't even know a lot. I knew what we know about it historically.
You've learned secondhand because it was history.
And because my mom came to, you know, to the United States right before that time, and so I know a little bit about it. But when I did some deeper digging, I found the parallels to be shocking. They had, right after Khomeini took power, in Iran, they had demonstrations by women. It was a women's march for 7 days in Tehran, in the city's capital, where they were chanting, "We will not go backwards," and "We did not have a revolution to go backwards." And you read into it, and you realize this was a theocracy that was actually a takeover by a fascist, and And it was under the guise of, like, taking the country forward. You know, there was all these promises of democratization and progress that were not what came to be. And it was allowed to happen because of a fractured political left wing where people viewed money as suspect and they just wanted to get out the monarchy and the ruling class. And it recalls the same sort of anti-Clinton, like, she's an imperialist, she's a war criminal, sort of the divide on the American left that we're seeing right now. And historians say that that theocracy was able to take root and go long-term because the political left in that country was unable to build the coalition needed to oppose it. That was literally it.
You know, it's
so
interesting.
They have that set up, yeah.
My show, this particular show, has been on KPFT since, like, December of 2013. Mm-hmm. And if I recall, I think the first two shows were actually back-to-back weekly shows on the history of Iran starting in the early 20th century and how it kind of came to be where it is and the various great power conflicts that, of course, it was caught in the middle of. And the fact that while Iran is definitely a theocracy, what people don't realize is it's not really a dictatorship. It's not the kind of democracy we think of as a democracy. But it also isn't entirely a dictatorship. The system has some potential for flexibility and change, but just glacially slow because it's a theocracy.
Well, and exactly. But also there is corruption in that government, and you know it's the people there are the. When I went there, I traveled there in 1999. I traveled to Iran. I was born and raised here, but I went to go get in touch with my roots.
Sure.
And what I found was the people were, I thought I would find dirt roads and camels and, like, you know, death to America.
Yeah.
But I found that people were so lovely and hospitable and kind and warm, and it was so rich with culture and history and art and nature. I mean, it's a truly beautiful country, and that was actually, if we're going to tie this back around to my journalism, really.
Yeah.
It was the first time I realized that the American media portrays things in such a slanted way that we are not getting the full picture at any given point. And that's not meant to sound conspiratorial.
No. I'll be honest with you, and I'll interrupt, and I actually remember what I was going to say before, but that was kind of my experience. I visited China a couple of times. I visited Taiwan once. And it wasn't what I expected. The people, and you know, this is the difference between people and government officials and government policy and how government manipulates public opinion to achieve certain ends. But on a human-to-human level, it is remarkable how different things are from what you expect. Without going into specifics, there was one particular incident that I think is worth mentioning, and I've reflected on it many times. We're in Tiananmen. And they had lots of police there. And these guys are selected for their efficiency, their appearance, how they can maintain discipline. And there was this one guy that I was watching, and it was brutally hot that day. Even our tour guide suffered from heat stroke. We all felt like we'd basically just jumped in a pool. We were all that soaking wet. And this guy was standing in full sun, no shade, hat on, straight at attention, head just pivoting back and forth, keeping an eye on the crowd, as many of the other guys were. And I decided to take a picture of him. And he must have seen me because he froze until I took the picture. I mean, think about this. This guy, I mean, he's a professional. He's probably a rough and tough guy, but he saw a Western tourist, probably American, but he didn't necessarily know, and he posed for me. And after I took the shot, I gave a little wave, and he gave an almost imperceptible nod and went back to scanning the crowd. I mean, that's how fascinating it is, the difference between the perceptions you accrue from media, and I'm sure this is true in media all over the world, the perceptions you accrue from media and the human-to-human interactions you get in sometimes the most unexpected ways and places. And this isn't even a topic we were going to discuss, but it seems to be one we've kind of gone off on. It's a fascinating thing. It's the reason that people need to travel. Travel your country. Travel other countries.
Oh,
don't
yeah.
be parochial. Don't think that Houston or Harris County or Southeast Texas is the world. It's not.
Right. And you know what? I was a teenager when I went to Iran, and I was so fortunate that I had that opportunity, and I'm very grateful to my mom. She made it happen. But, it was, like I said, it was the first time I realized not everything is as it appears in this insulated bubble that we exist in here. We are very isolated. I'm calling from L.A., so I have to constantly remind myself here that what we experience here on the coastal cities, as we saw in the recent presidential election, is not necessarily the way the rest of the country sees it. And it's really hard to sometimes get perspective because people see it differently. Not be right, but they see it differently, and there's a reason they see it differently.
I apologize. Let me do a quick station ID, and then I'm going to share my thought that I lost the line of before, and then I'm going to take some calls. It's sort of open forum. The phone number is 713-526-5738. It's so open that I have yet to even touch on any of the things that I had figured we would talk about. That's how open the forum is. 713-526-5738. You're listening to Think Wing Radio with Mike Honig on KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston. And my guest is Alex Mohajer, political writer and commentator for the Huffington Post, co-founder and editor-in-chief of Bros for America. The thought I wanted to share before, and then we'll take the first caller up, which I think is Wayne. Thank you, Wayne and Greg, for waiting. And there's a third caller that doesn't have a name on them in a moment. I remember during the election when people were making fun of, say, the Hillary campaign. It's like Hillary has been in public life for over 30 years. And they're making fun of the fact that she's like reintroducing herself to the public. You know, who doesn't know Hillary Clinton? This mostly from commentators in their early 30s and early 40s, maybe late 20s. And, you know, the thing to always remember is that the people that are going to be voting in the next presidential election right now are 14. And at 14, you're barely starting to pay attention. Maybe 15, because it's now 2017. So the next presidential election, those voters now are like 15. And you know what? If Hillary Clinton ran again, they wouldn't know enough about her that she could reintroduce herself again. Those first and second time presidential voters are young. And they're not, I guess they're ignorant in the uninsulting sense of the word, which is to say they don't know what they don't know. Which gives you an opportunity to fill that bucket with whatever you feel you can, let's call it propaganda-wise, because no matter whether you're in favor of it or not, that's what it is.
And that's what we saw happen, I think, in this last election.
Yeah.
What's troubling about that, Mike, is that we are in a misinformation age. We are in an era.
I don't like calling it a misinformation. I like calling it what it is, which is disinformation. Misinformation is in error. Disinformation is on purpose.
You may be right. Let's call it the disinformation age. I can do that. I like that. We're in the disinformation age. We are in an age. We're in a time where Russians can successfully, head up an influence peddling campaign for over a year and literally affect public opinion. And that's very troubling because at some point we have to, in the name of democracy, stand up and say, look, you're right. If Hillary Clinton were to run in 2020, she won't. But if she were to, she would have to do the same thing all over again an entire populace of people that now believe that she is, a war criminal or something.
Or people that are too young to believe anything and are simply buckets waiting to be filled with whatever information, disinformation, misinformation they're exposed to.
That's right. And that's problematic because we saw also in the recent election that young people didn't vote and the young people were disengaged because they are disenfranchised. I'm a millennial, but I'm among the older side of the millennial.
I'm a baby boomer, man. I'm old.
But, I remember 9/11 and that is a very formative, that was a very profoundly impacting moment for me because I think it affects me and affected
people. It was your Pearl Harbor. It was your Kennedy assassination, essentially.
Oh yeah. It was. You know, I was young enough to be disturbed by it profoundly, and old enough to understand it.
Right.
So I think it was.
But it lacked context. We're going to have to go to a caller because we've got people waiting, and believe it or not, our lines are full. So Wayne, you're on the air. Thanks for being patient. How you doing tonight?
Hey Mike, what's going on?
Well, I guess whatever we want.
Yeah.
It's been a wandering conversation.
Look here. What I call to say, first of all, how's mom doing? She doing okay?
Oh, my mom? Yeah, she was without power for about 36 hours, but she was very fortunate. She was one of the people to get power back early. So, very grateful. No flooding there, just power outage and a little disorientation for her. Thank you for asking.
Okay. All right. Now, here's what I want to say. I don't really think that Trump or Rump or whatever he thinks he wants to be called has understood what he has done this week when he attacked the National Football League, the NBA, the WNBA, and all of those union
sports
people.
Generally.
Yeah, sports in general. I don't think he really understands what he has done.
Do you think that was overreach on his part? Do you think that's a turning point philosophically for people in the country?
No, I think it's more than a turning point, Mike.
We're talking Trump supporters. There are Trump supporters who are sports supporters, and now you've got basically the sports organizations, the unions, the owners coming out against him. That could be a turning point for some of those people.
Well, it should be a turning point for everybody, not just the union people, but it should be a turning point for everybody. Because once you attack football players and haven't said what Trump said about those people, and I don't mean it derogatory, from my point, I don't mean it derogatory, but what he called them and what he said about their families as to being born, calling them SOBs and things like this, this is outrageous.
Did you hear the comment that he may literally have violated the First Amendment that prevents government from controlling speech by saying, as president, not as a private individual, saying as president, if they say certain things, they should be fired? That is government inhibition of speech. That is a literal First Amendment issue.
Well, what he should be is fired himself then, because he no longer holds the moral authority of anything. No more.
Well,
no more.
Of course.
When you step out beyond those boundaries and you say something like that about a race, a group of people, not a race, but a group of people, because there are all kinds of football players, black, white, Hispanic, Hawaiian. I mean, it's just a smorgasbord of people. So it wasn't directed at one person. It was directed at America.
Okay, Wayne, we do have a guest and we do have full lines. So I'm going to let Alex make any points he wants to make, and then I'll give you a final response, and then we'll move on if that's okay. Alex, okay. You have any thoughts on what Wayne's been saying?
I think this was a statement about race. I think Mr. Trump is saying that I'm not.
I cannot hear him.
I'm sorry, Bob. Wayne can't hear Alex. Is there some problem with the interconnection there? We're looking.
Okay.
We're not sure.
So I was saying that I think President Trump is basically saying that he's not going to stand up and speak out against white nationalists when they kill a young woman in the Charlottesville rallies, but he will call someone who isn't white or a part of that group out and call them an SOB, like Colin Kaepernick, for exercising his freedom of speech rights in defense of civil rights. It's just, it's absurd, and I think it was a very intentional racial sentiment, and it was meant to be a dog whistle to his supporters, which
now,
we are learning more and more are white nationalists.
Aside from all of that, what about the First Amendment issue?
If he were to have somebody fired, you know, it's troubling. Yes,
under color of federal office, he is calling on people who express a point of view to be fired. Now, that's not legislation, but I think certainly in principle, he violated the very core of the literal First Amendment.
Well, I mean, he's suggesting that the private employer take the action, so it wouldn't be a government action technically, but it goes against the very principle of the First Amendment, which he is to defend, and in that aspect, yes, it's absolutely problematic because he's basically saying you don't get to dissent in this country, you don't get to use your free voice in this country without the President of the United States calling for you to lose your livelihood and
requiring that you speak that your speech be a certain kind of speech.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Very problematic.
Bob, is Wayne still accessible to us? Okay, Wayne, do you have any final words before we go on to the next caller? And I appreciate your patience with our technical stuff.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Because there was something technical, but I didn't really hear what he said, so I can't comment on what he said. But what I'm going to say is this: that what Donald Trump, and I'm still going to say this, what Donald Trump has done, what he has done with this here, when he stepped out there and went against the NBA, all of these union people, it should let everybody know that Donald Trump is not for unions. And if we continue to listen to what this anybody, whether you be Republican or anything else, Democrat or whatever, well, I will always be a Democrat and a progressive at that. But whatever you do is, you better pay attention to what this man just said. Now, I've said this on the radio before, and I'll say it again. Donald Trump is going to start World War III. Whether y'all people understand that or not, he is going to start there.
Yeah, and that's one of the topics I haven't gotten to that I have
sketched
out. He is going
to start there.
Okay.
He's going to start there. But y'all have a good night, Mike.
All right.
I'll listen to the rest of the show.
Thank you, Wayne.
I've had my say. You go ahead on.
I appreciate it. Thank you so much. Take care. All right, you're listening to Think Wing Radio with Mike Koenig on KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston. You know, we can always use a little extra money, so if you want to help support this station, go to kpft.org and hopefully pick Think Wing Radio. But, you know, it all goes into the same pot, but it's nice to know people love me. And contribute what you can, as much or as little as possible. Also, you can help KPFT by telling two friends. Let them know about the station and what about it you suggest they sample and see if they like it. My guest is Alex Mohajer. I keep wanting to pronounce it, I guess, correctly.
you do it so well.
He's a political writer and commentator for the Huffington Post, co-founder and editor-in-chief of Bros for America. They are online. They are on Twitter. I do think he needs to keep it more up to date, however. I'm just going to sort of share that. And the line I love most from his bio was, at law school, he was named by his graduating class as most likely to be held in contempt, which is a good reason to go into journalism instead of law. Okay, so I think the next up is Greg. Is that correct, Bob? Are we up? Greg? Three?
Right here, if you
yes.
can hear me.
Greg, yes, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
All right, Alex, I have a question for you. As a patriot and a progressive, what's the best way to disarm some of the misstatements of fact that we hear in mainstream reporting about this man?
You're talking about intellectually, philosophically.
Intellectually, and also politically. How do you disarm people who want to believe anything and everything?
That's a great
question.
And
they just don't do it with any forethought or with malice.
How do you correct misinformation and disinformation that works with confirmation bias? So you've got all of those elements working together.
Well, you know, I think one of the major things that we saw happen in the recent election is that the media falsely equivocated the two candidates. So if one major headline comes out about Donald Trump and his a very factual thing that happened, he made statements in which he talked about, you know, sexually assaulting women, and they were caught on tape. And then they do a separate story. Also, in other news, Hillary Clinton was called a criminal today by so-and-so. Like, what? The problem there is that they are giving an equal amount of airtime to something that's like hearsay, that's not fact, that's just speculation of somebody. like Jim Comey's letter to Congress on October 28th, which wasn't a conviction. It wasn't an indictment. It was a letter, and then, of course, we found out it was rescinded. It wasn't real. Those stories were given the same, if not more, weight in the media than stories like, you know, Donald Trump sexually assaulting somebody or any of the his tax returns and his connection with Russian oligarchs, which we're learning about more and more now, but was something that we kind of knew about in October.
Well, it wasn't really covered. Years. It's like, what the hell were they waiting for? By the way, your voice is beginning to drift out again. So whatever you did that was great, we need to go back to that.
That's a matter of not necessarily misinformation. It was just a failure of the American news media to do their job. It was about sensationalism more than it was about getting people the facts.
This information was there to be dug up at the time. And it's like, what were they waiting for? They were waiting until it was too late because it wasn't a good enough story when he was only a candidate.
Well, I think people thought that she would win. And so they went for bombast and sensationalism rather than to tell the people the story.
I read that Trump received something on the order of what they call earned. Now I can't remember the term. I was just on the tip of my tongue.
Earned coverage,
basically worth $2 billion.
Yeah.
Earned airtime worth $2 billion. Yeah. That's what happens when you don't have equal time provisions, which were repealed, I think, in the 1980s under Reagan, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, and then you had, in the 2 weeks before the presidential election, there were 50 million negative media mentions about Hillary Clinton's emails and like Benghazi. That amounted to 50 million negative media mentions, the number one and number two controversies discussed in the media. The number three controversy, according to the study that was done by a media group called Echelon Studies, the number three most talked about controversy was Donald Trump's Access Hollywood tapes. That received 5 million negative media mentions. 50 million to 5 for something that was this abstract. Like, no one really knows, like, what they're upset about with the email.
We learned today
that six of Donald Trump's administration, close personal administration, are using personal email addresses to do government business, which is fantastic.
Yes, which is illegal, actually.
But it's what they chanted lock her up about.
Yes, you know? Exactly.
And then, compared to 5 million negative media mentions for something that is demonstrably terrible, it's an American presidential candidate saying he will abuse women physically and sexually, and that's problematic. I think that's problematic. That's a symptom of a failed news media.
And I'll let Greg make a comment in a moment. I just want to say that he has been guilty of potentially impeachable acts literally since his inauguration. Just on a financial basis, just on the remuneration thing, he has, and you know, all the other stuff is gravy. It's, and the Republicans, I have to believe, based on Occam's razor, I have absolutely no hard evidence of this. Not a journalist. I'm just, you know, an outside observer. I have to believe that the compromat goes way down deep into the Republican Party. Because nothing else makes any sense. When you look at Trump and Pence, and you look at the desires of the Republican Party, whether you agree with them or not, why they would not impeach Trump, who is incompetent and vain and probably starting to lose his mind, and instead get Pence, who, whatever you may think of him, is cold and calculating and politically experienced and would do what they want. I don't understand why they don't dump Trump for Pence, and the only thing I can think of is that they are all being blackmailed.
Well, it is politically devastating for Republicans to now lose their president because they have had to hedge and basically shift and pivot to support him after he was a very unpopular among the establishment Republicans when he was running. They didn't have a single nice thing to say about him. It's a very interesting to go back and look at the way they talked about him.
But, I mean, but like, they could do the right thing by impeaching him and actually get a better president for their purposes. Greg, I'm going to let you come in and make whatever comments you want to make, and then I'm going to move on.
Sure. I think the only way this changes is if some people in the Republican Party, which I don't think they're going to do, get to the point where they're so frustrated with this man's behavior, with his leadership, that they say, we've had enough. But as long as they want and crave power, that's not going to happen, because they would rather have power and position regardless of what this man does or what he thinks of the Constitution and his authoritarian actions as president.
Okay. Greg, if that wraps up your thoughts, I'm going to go on to the next caller, if that's
yes,
right.
It does. Thank you. Love talking to you, Mike.
Thank you so much, Greg. I appreciate you. Okay. Going on, and again, Alex, I don't know what you did the first time, but that was great for a while on your phone.
Okay. I'll try to do that what I did before.
Thank you. Okay. Next up is Gary. And by the way, we're starting to have some open lines, and at this point I think I can still get everybody on who calls if they call soon. 713-526-5738. Fascinating discussion, nothing I planned on talking about. That's the way life goes sometimes. Okay, Gary, how are you doing tonight? You're on.
All right, I have something else you didn't plan on talking about, but I would like your guest's opinion on the association between conservative and liberal politics and religion.
You want to just elaborate on your question a little bit?
Well, it seems that the more religious you are, the more regressive you are, and the more progressive you are, the more secular you are. And he was talking about Iran, and we're talking about Islam all the time, and about this this vote down in Alabama where the gentleman wants to institute religious law, you know, and
Christian,
supplant the Constitution.
Christian Sharia. Alex, that's kind of an interesting prospect.
Yeah, I mean, well, look at the history. I mean, we've got people whose beliefs are at least 1,000 years old. I don't care if you're Hindu, Buddhist, Muslim, Christian, Jewish. And then we've got people that are secular, and we have this conflict, this political conflict, and there seems to be a relationship there. I don't know. I just thought since your guest has a background and a knowledge of Iran, and I've been to Tehran, by the way, what his opinion is about this.
And I'm actually going to add another aspect to this. We have what I think we can fairly call a radical Christian right. And right. Just like in Islam, there are now progressive Christians who have felt kind of superseded and voiceless that are now trying to regain their voices and take American Christianity back from the right-wing Christian extremists, very much like the West is saying Islam needs to do in regard to the right-wing Islamic extremists. So there are interesting parallels there.
I agree. And I think that let me tell you what. I went to England. I backpacked Europe when I was like just out of college, and I spent a lot of time talking to people there and just trying to get a hold of their political atmosphere. And one of the things that someone told me, she was a very deeply religious woman, and she supported the more liberal party there, and she was telling me that if a politician in England were to talk about their religion or even God in a political speech, that they would be booed off stage, which I found really, really fascinating. It's sort of,
and they don't have technically a constitution that talks about that.
That's right. And I'm not here to bolster England. I'm not speaking to their government or their way
of doing
things.
You can be an Anglophile. We won't hold it against you.
An interesting anecdote about the way they view politics. And I think that it's something needs to happen here where it should be irrelevant what somebody's religion is when they run for office. They are there to represent a constituency. What do your constituents feel? And if they do have religious views, how do you best represent your constituents without imposing a religious view onto a general populace.
I think because the bottom line is you are free to practice your religion, but it has really, really virtually no place in civil law.
Right. And yep. Like with the gay marriage debate, it's like if you don't believe in gay marriage, then don't get one. You know, that was the best response. I would laugh when I'd see that.
Yeah, and actually, you know, there are some cynics who say if gay people want to get married, they deserve everything they get.
Yeah, no one is impeding upon your rights as an American, on your experience as a human being by getting married, you know?
You know, one of the things that I have found interesting, I mean, I have always been for equal rights under the law. And at the end of the day, what I realized was I was stuck on the difference between a civil union and marriage.
Mm-hmm.
And really, at the end of the day, I was just stuck on a couple of words.
Mm-hmm.
Because everything else that went along with either a civil union or a marriage, I agreed with. So it's like, well, you know, yes, I'm more comfortable calling it a civil union because I'm in that kind of age group. But you know what? If all you're going to quibble over is what it's called, that's ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, also, equal rights under the law. That's the bottom line.
Well, really what we should have done in that, I mean, this is just a tangent now, but really what the answer was in that debate, although we ended up getting it with the Supreme Court, but the answer was that we shouldn't be offering marriages to anybody anyway. If marriage is a religious institution, it has no place in government. And we should just offer everyone civil unions and call it a day.
Well, that's actually a point. Okay, Gary, I'm going to let you do a quick wrap-up, and then we're going to move on.
All right, well, you didn't answer my question. I guess it wasn't a fair question. I just wanted to see if you thought that people that believed in supernatural spirits, demons, ghosts, and magic were a little more primitive than the progressive politically. Goodbye.
Okay, goodbye, Gary. Yeah, Gary's calls tend to have a theme, but I like it.
I did not expect that at the end there, but.
Well, I didn't, but not surprised. Okay, so you're listening to Think Wing Radio with Mike Honig on KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston. You can listen live if you're ever out of town by going to kpft.org and listening live there, and you could tell your people that you tweeted. They can also go to kpft.org archive, and they can listen to this show later, and eventually I'll have it on my site, thinkwingradio.com. And by the way, as long as we're going there, at thinkwingradio is where you can follow me on Twitter. My guest is Alex Mohajer, political writer and commentator for The Huffington Post, co-founder and editor of editor-in-chief, rather, of Bros in America, and graduating class named him most likely to be held in contempt. My favorite part of that bio. Okay, next up is MOD. Bob? I'm sorry, Bob suddenly got busy. MOD, you're on the air. Thanks for calling. How are you doing tonight?
Hey, how are you gentlemen doing?
Okay, we're going to have to move along. I got three people now that I got to fit into about 16 minutes.
So I get 5 seconds, Mike?
I try to give you a couple of minutes minimum. Go ahead.
All right. So if we see, to your guest, Mozadeb in 53, and with the Shah put in power, or Pinochet put in Chile, or Saddam put in power in Iraq, or Franco in Spain. That's before U.S. had its power, but Castro in Cuba, or Hosni Mubarak in, you know, Egypt, Cairo. Why are we surprised that at least since the SSO actually came to fruition in the 40s, are we surprised to see a propped up clown like Trump put in power here after we've been doing it for the last 60 years abroad?
Alex, do you want to take a shot at that, and then maybe I will too?
I don't see the connection between Trump and then imposing the.
I think what he's trying to say is that after all the governments that have been put in place by external powers,
right?
How are we surprised that someone tried to do it to us?
I'm not necessarily surprised. I am surprised in that we What I'm most surprised about is that the response has been what it is. The response should be what we saw happened in South Korea this year and what we have saw happen in Kenya. South Korea and Kenya are two democratic governments that just overturned their presidential elections and ordered new ones through massive protests and an outraged electorate, because the president in both those countries was elected either illegitimately or through interferences with their free and fair elections. That should be the response we have here in the world's leading democracy. When we hear that that the Russians have spent over a year in a massive influence peddling scandal, to influence opinion in this country and drop fake news on our Facebooks, and it's an act of cyber warfare against our country. But we live in such a hyper-partisan time that people would sooner, we saw Republicans' approval ratings for Putin went up after the election because people would sooner side with Vladimir Putin than to, speak up for our democracy and our core democratic institutions and say, hey, maybe our opponent is the one that is the rightful victor in this.
MOD,
I think we can see that there are maybe not every uprising guys are, covered and influenced afar, and it doesn't serve an interest, the Western, forces. But what I just mentioned goes back to Gene Sharp's rancor, soft power. And when soft power doesn't work, we go to coup d'etats. And when coup d'etats don't work, we go to military invasions. So we've seen that Vietnam, and I can, Mike, I'll go through a list, but might save time for the conversation.
Yeah, let's not go through the list, but I think we get the gist.
We see that, through Marx, cultural Marxism in this country, it was soft power. It's been soft power since the I don't know where to start on this, but the Frankfurt School, when Hitler, pushed out those guys and they landed in San Diego, and they invaded the Chicago University. So I want to ask your guests, as far as soft power takeover through Gene Sharp's 198 ways to cultivate unrise revolution, I think he knows about this. Does he know about that? Does he know about the Frankfurt School, Marxist that came over here? Was it Mancuso, Adorno? And these kind of what we're seeing here in the States. And ask him also, does he know about Carol Quigley, Tragedy and Hope?
Okay, MOD, lists are tough on the radio, but I'm going to let you go, and I'm going to let Alex respond, and then I'm going to say something, and then we're going to get to, I believe it's
one more, let him respond, and I'll have one more rebuttal.
No, we're running out of time, and I apologize for that.
Well, you gave me half a minute, at least, Mike.
I gave you 5 minutes.
Did you?
I did.
Right on. Go ahead, guys.
All right, thank you, MOD. Alex, do you have anything you want to...
Mike, you go for it, because I didn't hear that last part.
Okay, the only thing that I would say, and it doesn't directly address MOD, but it's a comment that I hear a lot, is we have interfered in so many other countries' governments. Where do we get off feeling offended that a country messed with our elections and our government? And my response to that is, you know what? They were pissed, and they had every right to be pissed. And just because we've done, and by the way, most of the countries that were pissed that we did it to them also did it to their smaller neighbors whenever they could. Just because we have done it doesn't mean we don't have a right to be pissed. That's kind of my attitude.
Yeah, and also it's apples and oranges almost. I mean, fine, express your outrage about that, but I'm going to be here expressing my outrage about this, and we can walk and chew gum at the same time.
Right. Okay, we've got three more callers, and that's going to be the end. I do want to mention one thing. There is a motion before the Supreme Court that was distributed to the justices today. It's docket number 16-1464, Citizens Case for a New Election. This is something that we might want to watch. It's a second try, but a better brief. And the interesting thing is that the first time this came up, and just to be reviewed requires at least one justice wanting to review it. And the last time this was reviewed, it went to distribution, and they dismissed it the first day. without explanation, which is typically what they do. This time, the day of distribution, there has been no word, which means that they may at least think it's worth discussing. So we're going to have to keep an eye on this. Mark, I think, is the next one up. We've got some people that have been really, really patient. So we've got Mark, we've got Johnny, and then we've got Jeff. And I'm going to try to get everybody on, so we're going to try to be succinct. Mark, you're up. Thank you for waiting.
Sure. Two Mexicans showed up at my door today. I didn't ask them if they were United States citizens. I didn't ask them for a passport or a birth certificate or anything like that. I let them into my place. I didn't think they were rapists or murderers or anything like that. And I walked them through my place around the corner, and I showed them this thing that needed to be fixed. And they just tore the crap out of my wall, tore all the drywall out, and then they left. Thank God for the Mexicans.
You know, I have never seen a lazy Mexican. I mean, what the Mexicans that come to the United States, maybe they're exceptional, maybe they're not. I have never met or seen a lazy Mexican. I'm just saying. Thank you for that, Mark. Is there anything else you want to say, or are we going to get some extra time?
No, that's it. Just all Mexicans come to Houston and fix it. Thanks.
I appreciate that. Thank you so much, Mark. Okay, next up is Johnny. Johnny, you've been waiting a really long time. I want to make sure you get on. How you
it's
doing?
It's okay. I'll get right to the point. I'm not going to beg you for extra time.
Okay.
Two things. I agree that Donald Trump is an artificial creation of the media, an artificial amount of media time given to him by the oligarchy. But there's another ingredient that we tend to forget about, and that's the fact that on the outside, President Obama was consistently too soft and easygoing with Republicans. So in other words, when you give Republicans an inch, they take 3 miles. For example, you have a caller, two callers back. He thought he had 1 minute or half a minute. You give him 5-6 minutes. They always ask, they have no compunction about asking for more than what they really deserve. And likewise, if the next black president, if we have one, let it be someone like Chris Rock, who's not going to hold them any quarter, because when you're soft with them, they get hard with you.
Now we're talking Chris Rock, not Kid Rock.
Chris Rock, the comedian, Chris Rock, that's right. Barack Obama was too soft, and that was part of the reason that why Republicans acted even worse, because they're not challenged. And when you don't challenge a bully, they get worse. And there is an exception to the rule, with all due respect to Gary, Reverend William Barber, he of Moral Mondays fame. He's the exception to that idea that the more religious, the more idiotic or ignorant or whatever. There are exceptions to the rule, so I'm not going to discount all religious folks.
There are extremists in every camp. There are Jewish radicals, too, and, you know, I think they're nuts, so...
Right.
There
so
is
you're not
no religion.
The police department speakers should get a few bad apples. You fire them. You prosecute the ones that shoot black people in the back. Mm. There you go. Enforce
right.
the law. That's it.
Okay, Johnny. Is that it?
Good night.
Good night. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, I've got Jeff on the line. Alex, do you want to contribute anything before we get to Alex? We've got about 5.5 minutes.
You know, I think that President Obama was a little overly pacifist. And at the end there, with regards to the Russian hacking, and I think he was trying to be as nonpartisan as possible because at the end of the day, he's a good man. So I can't begrudge him being a good man, but his having been a little stronger at the end there in opposition to what we were seeing happen would have been nice.
Well, okay, last caller is going to be Jeff. You're on the air,
good
Jeff.
Evening,
thanks for
bro.
Waiting. Hi.
Here's my point. T. Rump, who I'm certain has no idea what the agreement between Iran and the 5+1, in fact, he probably doesn't even know what the 5+1 is, but that's the five members of the UN Security Council plus Germany in this particular case. He probably has no idea that the U.S., if we want to impose sanctions, the rest of the world isn't, because they're satisfied with the agreement. What's your take on that regarding the Iranian position?
Alex?
On the Iranian nuclear deal?
Yeah.
I didn't hear that. But I can't.
He's basically asking, based on the Trump opposition to the Iranian nuclear deal, and the fact that the other countries involved in that deal feel that they're basically adhering to the letter of the agreement. Do you have any thoughts or information or opinions on that?
And under the agreement, Iran basically agreed to eliminate its stockpile of uranium, medium-enriched uranium, and then cut its supply of low-enriched uranium by like nearly 100%.
I think they destroyed like 90% of their centrifuges.
Yes. Yes.
I mean, it's like unbelievable.
Yes.
We wouldn't do it.
They were complying. It's like the purpose of this deal is nuclear non-proliferation, and that needs to be an objective of any American president and administration moving forward. That Donald Trump, even before he was inaugurated, was like openly calling for an arms race was problematic, and I think nothing we're seeing him do now is a surprise. And I think we're bearing the consequences of this. I don't know that I can speak to the rest of this question though.
Okay, Jeff.
I wish to express a little bit more.
I'm sorry.
I'm just saying the signatories of that agreement. If the U.S. chooses to be obstreperous and ignorant, the rest of them can still continue with it without any significant change in Iranians' position.
We have a large economy, but we don't have the singular economy like we used to. And the fact is, if we don't have partners in trade embargoes, they won't work. Okay, Jeff, I'm going to let you go. Bob, thank you so much for calling. Bob had a comment he wanted to make, and then if we still... Okay, well, the comment basically is we need to control standing water. Bob, do you want to speak to it really quickly, or should I just do it?
Yeah, I just find it ironic that our green recycle cans are holding water in this city, and recycling's been suspended. So there's a reason to reinstate recycling, because at least the can would get upended and provide relief for irresponsible people who don't dial 311 and get the lid replaced. And the city needs to make better lids for the green recycle
can. And this basically applies to...
We're all worried about Zika. There's the city bringing Zika right to you.
And this is basically an issue with anything that collects water and stands, whether it's toys, tools, tires, buckets, garbage pails. It's a serious mosquito problem, especially after the flooding we had. Man. Okay. I'm going to let Doug get on if he can speak his piece in 30 seconds, because that's what he's got. Doug?
You got it. Hey, Mike. If people aren't sports fans, you might want to do a Google search on Take a Knee NFL. Also look up Dale Earnhardt Jr. made some very good comments. This is like the biggest thing in civil rights in the last 10 years. And people might really want to get on top of it.
I think I might agree with that. I appreciate the point, Doug. Thank you for calling. I'm sorry we don't have more time.
That's fine. That's all I need to say, man. You have a good week.
Right. You too. Okay. You've been listening to Think Wing Radio with Mike Honig on KPFT 90.1 FM. My guest has been Alex Mohajer, political writer and commentator for The Huffington Post, and proudly named by his graduating class as most likely to be held in contempt. Just for fun, I'm going to tell you that the topics that I had that I never used, the Kenya elections, the ACA replacement appears to be unwinding. North Korea says Trump's latest threat is a declaration of war. An article from the U.S.-Korea Institute, the lamps are going out in Asia. This is all stuff I was thinking of talking about. We didn't get to hardly touch it, but we had fun.
Maybe next time.
All right. Thank you so much for listening. See you next Monday. Thank you, Alex. Have a great day.
Thank you.
KPFT Houston thanks our community partners, AIDS Foundation Houston, offering free HIV testing every Monday and Tuesday. More information at AIDSHelp.org. The Houston Dynamos will be hosting matches this week with proceeds going to hurricane relief efforts. HoustonDynamo.com for more information. And Natural Awakenings, Houston's local healthy living magazine, featuring the latest on health, fitness, and nutrition. Available for free online at naturalawakenings-houston.com.
Black history is happening every day. It's time to start thinking of it outside of a day or a week or a month. We hope to inspire you by enlightening you with those people and events that should be learned from and forever remembered.
Today is September 25th. On this day in 1962, African-American professional boxer Sonny Liston knocked out Floyd Patterson in the first round to become the world heavyweight boxing champion. A dominant contender of his era, Liston repeated the knockout in the following year, 1963, in defense of his title. The World Boxing Council, or WBC, also awarded Liston the title of inaugural heavyweight champion.
Achievements and events are not confined to the past. Make sure to etch your own path in the pantheon of human history. This has been Black History Month 365, BAM 365, where you find every day Black history is made.
Zika is still a threat, and its effect on an unborn child can be devastating. So we're taking our doctor's advice on how to protect